I'm Paula Gordon, Bill Russell. We're both delighted to be with Roger Schlickhuysen, who is the president of the wonderful Defenders of Wildlife. You were talking about next generations, those thereafter, being denied what looks like the ability to make a living. You're talking about being denied the ability to breathe, to have clean air, water, to just, these are basic things. This isn't just what, how big is your mansion?
At its most extreme, that's it. I mean, it, you know, but you don't, presumably the water just wouldn't become undrinkable, but the quality would go down. The quality of the air will go down. You'll have more erosion. You'll have more extreme weather events. But even from another perspective, from the perspective of their opportunities, you know, we forge our rich lives off of the biodiversity that is provided to us by nature. And to the extent that we cut down on that biodiversity, that there is less biologically diverse nature out there than there was, we are reducing the opportunities that that future generations will have compared to what we have, basically, to exploit that nature in our own self-interest. And we are shrinking biological diversity. It is becoming less, the planet is becoming less and less biologically diverse all the time, and it is accelerating now due to biological, due to global warming. And so from the perspective of what kind of opportunities, we have more opportunities to forge a rich livelihood from living nature, because there is more biologically diverse living nature out there than we are going to leave them with. And so in that sense, we are harming them. That's indisputable, fundamentally. That's apart from whether we so destroy the water and the air that they doesn't support life at all. But that is the result at its most extreme.
I want to talk about how to fix this.
That's quite a burden we have on that little wolf.
I mean, the wolf is part of it. The grizzlies are part of it. Global warming. I have the sense that we have a president whose instincts are good. Who is willing to look at evidence as opposed to ideology, which is progress. I have the sense we have a Congress that is, in the worst case, the best government money can buy. But the funding of political campaigns is a problem, and we're seeing it in the in this energy legislation. The energy legislation. People are being peeled off because they have interest in coal, or because they're from an oil-producing state or a gas-producing state. Mm-hmm. And it seems that ultimately, we, and this goes to the media challenge, we've got to bring the people along. Mm-hmm. I mean, they do get to vote. There's this other party out there that is the corporations that are a big part of how Congress behaves and how they make decisions. And it seems to me, real world, that we have a monumental challenge on our hand with respect to really two major constituencies. One is the corporate environment, and the other is the general public, neither one of which are convinced of the kinds of things we're talking about. How do we move that?
Well, the only way you can do it is first of all, through the media deciding it's a problem. And it was when the media decided that global warming was a problem that the public got it. I mean, I don't think there is any way to get there short of the media understanding that. And so you did get there to a certain degree, If I whine about this, it's because the media didn't take the next step of realizing that the global warming problem went beyond cutting emissions, that it has to do with the impact, that how serious that is. But the media is key on it. Then, of course, what shapes the media? Groups like ours try to shape the media, but we're one voice out there trying to get their attention. And sometimes we're successful, a lot of times you're not. Everybody's trying to get their attention for something. You hope that our political leaders will speak out on this. And you hope the president will. He's the best messenger that we've got on this sort of issue right now. And they're playing it, I'm not casting value judgments. They're playing it the way they think is best. And right now, in this environment, they think politics responds best to something if it looks like it's going to help the economy and it's going to help jobs. And that's their message points right now. And you can't see them on TV or on radio or read the newspapers any day without recognizing that's where they're playing this. And they may be making the absolute right choice there. But in doing that, they aren't talking about the kind of problems I've been talking about, which is the impact of global warming on biological diversity. They don't think... My guess is they don't see that as winning votes in Congress. And what they're about is trying to see how you win votes in Congress. And what I hope is that while they're winning votes in Congress, first of all, they'll be successful. But because we haven't emphasized the problem of the impact of biological diversity, we don't leave that on the cutting room floor. You know, you've got so that you have people out there, including, again, what you would think of as normally very much pro-environmental congressmen out there saying, okay, we'll cap emissions, but let's give all the money back to consumers. But if nobody's telling that there's a problem, that we have to deal with the impact, they're liable to do that. The unfortunate thing is it's possible to have a balance in all that. And there should be enough federal revenues, depending upon how the cap and trade legislation is enacted, that you can handle a lot of problems, including providing a significant amount of money that can go to the federal government, to state governments, and to tribal governments to help them deal with the biodiversity loss problem. It has to be dedicated money that does that, though, because given the budget situation and the history, for example, I was telling you about the Endangered Species Act, if you have to depend upon future Congresses and presidents to appropriate those billions of dollars per year, it will never happen. So it has to be dedicated money that comes out of the federal revenues that come from the sale of these emission allowances.
There's also a role for good old-fashioned citizens in this, isn't there?
There is, I have a great deal of faith in the American public if they recognize that it's a problem. Oh. But if there isn't, there aren't leaders telling them it's a problem, and the media, I'm not trying to beat up on the media, but they shape everybody's opinion on this. If the media are unwilling to tell them what a serious problem this is, then I guess, you know, we can't be too upset that the public isn't rising up and saying, protect my children and my children's children and their children's children, because we have to do something about saving biodiversity. I'll bet you the values are there. The values are there. I think no one cares more in America than about anything other than caring for their children and their grandchildren and future generations. There are values there to touch, but you need a vehicle, a way to awaken those values and touch them. And we're missing that. And the political debate, the whole direction of the political debate on global warming legislation is how can we cap emissions? And if you have a certain amount of federal revenues that comes from the sale of the allowance of those, how do you buy enough votes to get a majority so that you can cap the emissions? And then the question is whether there's anything left for dealing with the impacts of biodiversity. And I worry a great deal that there may not be enough left. But first of all, you've got to get the legislation. You've got to cap the emissions. But that's the only train that's going to leave on this. You've got to have, if it's global warming legislation and it deals with the problem, it has to both cap emissions and it has to deal with the impact on biological diversity. Or future generations, to paraphrase Ed Wilson, are going to look back on us and blame us for this, and they will be right to do so.
Was Ed Wilson that said that we are in the midst of another great extinction event. The difference is instead of being an asteroid, it's humans.
Well, that's right, and they've been saying that for decades, and that was before you put the impact of global warming on top of that. I mean, we could lose 35-40% of our species. You know, talk about tearing holes in the web of life. The web of life can tolerate a certain amount of insult. But not at that level. You're clearly going to be causing damage here, and anybody will get that intrinsically if they have a chance to think about it.
And those earlier extinction events, some of them wiped out 90-95% of all life on Earth. So
yes,
this is not. I don't think it's hyperbole when Wilson talks about it that we are working our way there, and humans cannot survive without other life forms. In spite of what we think. Our technology isn't that advanced.
We make our livelihood off of that, those other life forms.
One of the great success stories of the 20th century was the civil rights movement. And in some ways, it drug politicians kicking and screaming into a different way of seeing things. And I ask that because it's real tempting to say, well, we elected Obama, let him take care of it. We have Congress, let them take care of it. And the media piece of this is absolutely essential. But there are things, attitudes, making noises, doing whatever, that individuals and groups of people in the community, electoral politics aside, that people can do that will begin to have an impact. And ultimately, and I think of the March on Washington, where the leaders, the group of leaders, was not leading, they were following. They were in the middle of the program.
To which we will return in just a moment with Roger Schlickhuysen from the Defenders of Wildlife. Please be with us.